Accession number 30143, Reel 1.
And this is Matthew Cook, Reel 1. So could we start right at the beginning then, Matthew? And could you tell me where you were born and brought up?
Wow, in the beginning. I was born in Epsom Hospital and brought up in a small, I suppose, on the edge of the suburbs in a small village called Bookham, which sort of backed onto trees and woodland. So it was an ideal spot to grow up. In Surrey, obviously.
What sort of family did you come from?
Quite a small family. Mum and Dad's still alive. One brother. Just very happy, I suppose, middle class family. My father was in advertising and drew a lot, so whenever we went on holidays, that was probably my introduction to drawing.
And your education?
I went to a private school, private secondary school, did my O-levels, stayed on for my A-levels, and then went to art school after that. I did a foundation course at St Martin's in London, and then went on to Kingston, because they had a sort of strong drawing slant to them, and went on to do a degree in illustration and graphic design, but concentrated on the illustration bit.
How soon did your interest in art emerge? You were saying your father used to draw. Was that an influence?
Greatly. It still is. I still get nervous showing him my drawings. I'll always go, oh, that's not your best, is it? And he's probably one of my harshest critics, which is healthy. But drawing-wise, literally from 3 or 4 years old, from a toddler. So I don't know if it was something in the blood. I think it actually came before knowing what my father did for work and things.
So leaving Kingston Art School, what were your aims then? You know, what did you hope to do?
Oh, that was a scary thing, suddenly you're in the big wide world. Rather luckily for me, I went to see a talk by Linda Kitson. This must have been a few years after the Falklands War, and that just spurred me to do sort of drawing on location, which is what I did anyway, but this sort of gave me such enthusiasm. I think that afternoon, after seeing her do a talk at the Royal College, I think it was, I went on, signed on for Operation Raleigh, who did expeditions overseas. So literally that afternoon I filled up some forms and applied for them, and by pure coincidence, the day my degree show finished, there was a reconnaissance expedition to northern Portugal, and they wanted to know if I could go away for 2 months to do some drawings of a footpath covering the sort of Atlantic coast in northern Portugal, for partly sponsored by the Gulbenkian Museum. And obviously I wasn't going to say no, so I was straight up, no looking back.
So would that be your first sort of paid job?
Apart from the occasional book cover and, yes, sort of fairly small scale things in between there. I think I used to work for a BBC magazine called World, and bits and pieces, but yes, this was the first, this was going to shape me more than I realised.
So it was really mainly keeping to the footpaths, sort of mapping them?
Well, we were mapping and creating footpaths through there, quite a long distance one. Yes, and just trying to come up with guides and working with the local Portuguese marines. A great adventure. It was wonderful. Mm. Walking and drawing, which is sums me up, really. Yeah.
And then?
Well, that was a prior, that was a reconnaissance expedition for an expedition that probably happened 2 or 3 years later to Portugal, again with Operation Riley. But in between that, my application for an expedition had gone through, and I went to New Zealand for 6 months on one of their main expeditions.
Operation Riley again, was it?
Yes, this is all Operation Riley. And a chap called Lee Kenyon picked me out as being, he obviously saw on my form that I drew, and he was a sort of art coordinator sounds a bit grand because there were so few people helping, but he was an artist himself, and again another great influence for me. He had been shot down, he was a tail gunner in I think Wellington Bombers, and had been shot down and was prisoner in one of the Stalag Luft, can't remember which number, but the one that the Great Escape happened, and he drew drawings on the back of Red Cross parcels, you know, using the wooden lids, and he did drawings on those, and I believe they were buried in the tunnel at the time, you know, when the tunnels were filled in, and after the war some troops went back and collected the drawings, and so he was an amazing influence to me. I was just in awe of him. He sadly died sort of 5 or 6 years ago, but you know, a great influence. So anyway, back to the story. He singled me out and said, "Oh, well, let's make you an expedition artist," which they'd never had before. So this was a first trial. I'd originally applied as a venturer, which is just one of the I think up to the age of 25, it was Prince Charles, sort of patron by Prince Charles, and it was to give young people the challenges of war, but without the conflict side. So it was to give them a bit of a kick up the backside, really, and try a bit of life. Unfortunately, I think most of the people, you had to basically earn the money or get it through sponsorship. So partly just through that, I think a lot of it turned out to be quite middle class and the sort of people who would have done it anyway, but it was still a good thing. But instead of being a venturer, I was then put on the staff side as an expedition artist, which made me one of the youngest staff members. I think I was 21 or 22 or something. And so in between drawing, the rest of it would be trying to allocate helicopters and loads and working out who was going to be where and which mountains they were going to be doing. And, this was where I first tried drawing underwater. We did some scuba diving and we're doing lake weed surveys in some of the fjords. And so I'd actually planned beforehand, I'd taken out lots of waterproof paper, which is a sort of horrible plasticky sheet, which you can only draw in pencil, so it's only linear, but it was an experiment, drawing underwater. Had a great time, the whole expedition. That led on to, I stayed on in New Zealand, I think, for another 4 or 5 months, then travelled through Australia. This is travelling by myself, and went up, continuing to draw. I thought I'd just make the most of it before I had to come back and earn a proper living. I can't quite remember how all the expeditions fitted together. I ended up going on about four, maybe five expeditions, and didn't really come home until about 4 years later, which I don't think my mum and dad were too pleased, but I came back occasionally for a week or two and then would go off again. One of the next Operation Riley expeditions was sailing on a square rigger. They had a brigantine that we sailed around the West Indies and up to the Amazon. And again, I would sort of strap myself dangling off mast to get angles to draw and things. It was just wonderful. But obviously, you had to work. You had to learn the names of over 100 different ropes, you know. Four topmast staysail and the gallant halyards, and you know, it was quite an education just on the seafaring side. Everyone took turns in cooking, you had to make the bread if you're on night watch. You know, it was a real eye opener.
Wonderful experience for, you know, a young man. I can't think of a better education, really.
No.
I expect you were with interesting people as well.
Yes. I forgot to say the mix of people were. It was completely international, so there were Australians, New Zealanders, Argentinians, Chileans. I met my first Inuit, Japanese. It was across the board, and they're still friends today. I didn't realise it at the time. You know, you think, oh well, you know what? You come back from these sort of wonderful adventures, and people, maybe that some of the staff and the older staff are going, it'll be 10 years before you realise what we got out of it. And it's now that I've still got friends that we can pick up 10 years later from where we left off, and friends all around the world, and they've always got a place to stay if they come around here, and likewise. So it's, yes, quite a very good friends network.
I was thinking also of your art, you know, all these, just thinking of that ship with the rigging and, you know, the lines, and, you know, looking at some of your later work, I would think that must have been quite challenging, you know, to draw things like that and to build up that expertise of quickly doing it and getting it right. So, you know, was this all good art experience as well? And also those vehicles and ships and in New Zealand, when you went there, were you sort of building up expertise with art? And
yes, I suppose. Yes, for me it was a continuation from art school. This is like my practical, you know, drawing practical phase. Logistically, it was good training for war art. I drew a lot larger at the time, which wasn't always practical. I'd tape pages together to make large drawings. The inks dried up. I had inks knocked over by dogs, wild dogs and things, so I would lose colours, so I'd have to sort of make do. I had to ration water, obviously being on the ship. Yes, fresh water was at a bit of a premium. And we crossed the equator, and there's obviously a ceremony when, once you cross the equator, and they shave my head, and King Neptune, who's the captain, I think I had to drink cod liver oil because I'd used too much fresh water in my drawings, and I don't know, all sorts of things coming back to me now. But yes, in hindsight, it's meant that I whittled down my drawing equipment to very manageable, that would fit in a tiny bag. Probably the scale of my drawings reduced just because, again, it was easy to fit in a small day sack or in a rucksack. There was one island, some islands we stopped off the Brazilian coast called Noronha, and there's no landing bay, and it's probably a population of about 1,000, and it's just a huge volcanic plug. I think the next nearest island is Devil's Island, where Papillon was imprisoned, or Papillon's book was based. And from the ship, we had to dive overboard and swim in the surf, so it was a good probably kilometre swim to get onto shore, and vice versa coming out. So all my sketchbooks went into about 10 different bin liners and double knots and sellotaped up, and they still got wet. But but that was all teaching me what was a practical size, and to cover myself, to carry spare inks. And it actually taught me to use, I just use three primary colours. I just use a red, yellow and a blue, and I mix all my drawings from those primary colours. Initially I used to take all sorts of different coloured inks out, but I didn't want to carry them and didn't have time to, so whittled it down just to the bare essentials, which I still use now in the studio upstairs. I still have my three pots. But that's all you need, so, you know. Yes, it was good training. I'm trying to think where I went to after. After Brazil, I then went travelling through Papua New Guinea, which for some reason I wanted to go to since I was a child. I spent about 4 months there, returning to Australia to sort of work in bars and things to get some cash, and then returning. And that probably, alongside the war, that was probably one of the highlights of my life, was just, I travelled alone and just being, it was just amazing. I very quickly learnt I would avoid the main towns or cities, or use them as a staging post. And I'd often leave equipment, or tell the local police station where I was heading off to. I'd leave my rucksack or stuff I didn't need, and I'd just head off on a path and just head into the bush. I did buy some maps beforehand, so I was slightly prepared, but they were about 20 years out of date. and it had big white areas where it just said relief data incomplete. You know, it was all done from aerial photographs by the Australian Army. And yeah, being a kid, I just wanted to go to one of these white patches, a patch that hadn't been mapped, and sure enough, it was exactly the same as everywhere else, but it was just nice to be on a white bit of mapped.
Were there people about in these areas?
I wasn't alone for any one time. Villagers would always walk with me, and it sounds corny saying this, that they have hollowed out tree trunks that they use as drums, so it's an odd, it's not a drum sound, it's a clunking wood sound, but the sound resonates and travels, and that was a system of saying, hey, there's a white guy coming. They usually thought I was a missionary, just because any white guy is a missionary. So I remember one village turning up hot and sweaty with my sketchbooks and my rucksack, and the village was just coming out of a Seventh-day Adventist church. The whole village streamed out, and I shook hands with everyone. There must have been 200 people, and I can imagine how Prince Charles feels. You know, my face was aching from grinning and saying good afternoon to everyone. I had to shake hands to everyone. And some of the elderly ladies, if they lose a son or a family member, they'll chop off a finger in sort of mourning. So some of these elderly women only had one or two fingers, so they'd be shaking their hands. But wonderful experience. And I love, in fact, it was the people that I liked drawing. Although I liked the jungle, I just didn't know how to draw it. I didn't even try it. But it was the people I went after. And lots of war wreckage from the Second World War. There were a few remains of Japanese bombers, and some of the villages were very fascinating. You had to use Jeep, old American Jeep bonnets as tables, and you'd see tail fins of bombs propping up the houses. They would just use bits of wreckage to, even now, you know, to their advantage in everyday life. So it's, yes, I found that fascinating. So there's been that sort of interest in military side from the dot, I think. I don't know where that comes from.
Would you have had an exhibition after a trip like that? You know, I'd imagine there was a lot of interest, was there, in Australia?
I never followed that through, really. I think it was probably missed opportunities. I must do it again.
Well,
can
consult your wife.
Yes, that's true. They can come along. There was an exhibition of the expedition drawings at the National Army Museum. So this was, again, thanks to Lee Kenyon. I think this was... The actual Operation Riley lasted for 4 years in total. It had gone phases, then it reformed and became Riley International, and so it keeps regenerating itself. And there was an exhibition of the final drawings. So some of mine were from Papua New Guinea, from Brazil, from Portugal, and from New Zealand. So it's a mixture of everything. And that sort of brought an end to that phase of it.
Yes, but I can well see that was a very important sort of further education.
It did mould me,
in
yes.
The practical side of it, you know, from what you were saying. So would it be at this, after that, that you got involved with the Times?
It probably was soon after that. I suppose friends I'd made during expedition had influenced me. I remember quite a few of them were either regular army or TA or ex-army, so I very quickly went and joined the parachute battalion, a territorial unit. At the same time, that's when I started doing my commercial work. I started working for magazines. Then I started work. I found an agent, or rather, an agent found me, which eased up my time, which meant I could concentrate on the actual drawing. And they did a lot more of the sort of administration and searching for work. And I've kept with that agent, and I'm still with them now. The first Times job, yes, it came. I think it was drawing the Offersdyke path. Again, it's walking and sketching, so it was ideal. Some of these jobs I had to pinch myself that you know, I'm being paid to do it. It's just wonderful. Again, I'm by myself, staying in bed and breakfast, buying umpteen maps and trying to piece this route together. And at the time, certainly now I'm realising how secretive the press are, that they weren't going to tell me who the job was for. So I was doing this job and I didn't know who it was for. I knew it was a newspaper, but didn't know which one. And I think they were starting a new Saturday Review or Saturday Colour supplement, but they obviously keep it top secret from its competitors. And it was a very open brief. It was, Matthew, here's the copy from a writer. Just go off, just, you know, don't try and illustrate the copy, but just draw anything that's interesting, which was ideal. And then for the newspapers, because my drawings are actually inside the newspaper, they're not selling it, so they're quite relaxed for me to do my own thing. Whereas if it was on a cover, I'd probably quite a strict brief. You know, we want this and we want that and we want that shape. Whereas these jobs are completely open-ended. They weren't pre-designed, so if I came up with 50 ideas for 50 drawings, sure, they wouldn't have space for it, but you know, they would design it around my drawings, which is a nice way. So my drawings are often either long and thin, or I could use odd shapes, and they would use that through the page, so that the story went round it, which was ideal. And that they printed them in full colour, and it was, yeah, it was just very exciting. That led on to walking the South Downs Way, the Cornish Coast Path.
And for the Times as well?
Yes, yeah, all for the Times.
It sounds an ideal.
Yes, it was. It was lovely.
Like being asked to go on holiday, but do a few
things. Well, yes, it's never quite. I'm always worrying, and I take life too seriously. I'm always worrying. My God, I don't relax until I know I've done, or I've at least got the main drawing, if not in my head, until I've worked it out. So I'm always a bit anxious. It's not. Yes, not quite as relaxed and idyllic as it sounds. I wish I was a bit more relaxed, but yeah, I have to wait until I know I've got the basics of the job done. Then I can enjoy it.
Yes, so probably that accounts for your, you know, the quality of your work. You know that you have that attitude. When they actually printed them in the Times, did you have any say on the sort of outlay of them, the way they were laid out? Did they consult you?
No, no.
Or did you just have to hand them over?
No, I've never consulted. The way illustration works, I come up with pencil sketches, which I either fax in those days over, so they could see which drawings I wanted to draw up, if you like. So they would almost design it around that. Then they'll come back saying, well, we like this one, could you do that one 5 columns wide and, you know, 15 centimetres high? So it's sort of, yes, a bit between the two of us it would emerge. And I would put comments on my scribbles, you know, can I carry this on right up the page? Or so, yes, there's an element of both of us working together. But it was a designer who, a guy called Chris Craig, that I completely trusted. I didn't realise it at the time. It's only now in hindsight that he understood how I worked, and I would do drawings imagining how he would use them, and it just worked. It was no surprise when I'd open it up and that was how I saw the drawing. So yeah, it's a very good working relationship, and it's quite rare now, and I realise that I took it for granted at the time. I just assumed that everyone was like that, but it's not. You get some horrendous usage of the drawings.
And I imagine having an agent would have taken all that bothersome business away from you, would it? You know, of money and getting work. That must have been quite important. Did it free you up a lot?
It did. They take a big commission, but yes, it did free me up. Yes, the scary thing was, I'm glad, I think it was about a year after I started working and I got the agent, but it was good for that initial year to go around places, studios and magazines with my portfolio and get reactions from people. It's, yeah, a very healthy way, but terrified me. It was, I would liken it to taking a clothes off in public, opening up my portfolio. It's just so vulnerable, and you know, someone might spend a minute looking at it and go, yeah, thanks very much, we'll call you, and it can be quite disheartening, but I'm glad I did it. I'm still not very good at showing my drawings, it's still very vulnerable, a sensitive lot. I've forgotten where I was going with that.
Well, I think you now go, is it to Wapping? You go on to doing the job of the Move of the Times.
Yes, I forgot some things. When I was at art school, I did, going back in time here, I remember the Wapping riots were on telly, and I just thought, oh, I'll go down and do some drawings of the riots, which the Times archive have recently bought. I found the drawings, and I was scratchy black and white drawings. And the Times Archive bought them, which is nice, 20 years ago. And for a while I rented a flat in Notting Hill, and it was in the really grotty part of Notting Hill then, it was by St Luke's Road. And at the end of the carnival there was usually, a riot sounds a bit grand, but there was usually fights with the police, and there was trouble, so I'd be sitting on the windowsill sketching. And so there was an interest in that, yeah, a bit of confrontation, an element of danger. And I did lots of drawings at night as well in Notting Hill and London, so the canals at night time and railway yards. Always had an interest for sort of industry and run-down bits of town. I think that does come from my father, so we'd go on holiday, we'd ignore the sort of pretty beaches and things, and we'd go off to the slummy bits of town. So, and still an interest of mine.
And very relevant, I would think, for your later war art.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Destroyed buildings and mosques and what have you, which I've been looking at.
Yes, it's only now when I've thought about it that all these sort of things led up to my. I was in the Scouts and the Cubs, the Scouts, the Venture Scouts. I love my camping and walking. And all these things tied up. Yeah, I think I've been years training for this, but without knowing it.
Are we going on to Wapping? When you recorded the Move of the Times.
Yes, that wasn't that long ago. That was probably only seven or 8 years ago.
Yes, oh, I see.
Okay,
yes.
Don't want to miss a. I don't think.
No,
I just worked in between, I think.
Anything relevant, you know, building up your expertise, your sort of practical outlook, your toughness. You were in the. When did you join the Territorials?
It was probably 1991. The first Gulf War was just happening.
Oh, really? So there was more before then, was there? More sort of relevant experience before you went into the Territorials?
No, probably not.
Why did you join the Territorials? You know, what was the motivation of going into the army? Was the army you went into?
Yes, it was a parachute regiment. I wanted the challenge at first. Strange enough, at the time, I remember I was working non-stop. You know, I was just starting up my business, my career, if you like. And I was always drawing, every weekend, just always working. And I saw the TA as a way of switching off and just a change from it. I just thought, right, new challenge. And I never saw it... Yes, I saw it as a challenge, and certainly doing the parachute selection and P Company, an incredible challenge, but I never... Once I decided to do something, I'll never give up on it. Yeah, I might fail, but it won't be through giving up. So I enjoy the physical challenge. I think a lot of that came from Operation Rye and working in hot and humid or cold or damp and miserable. I still do that today. I run mountain marathons, I orienteer, another continuation of all of those things.